Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. Idea Talks is a monthly conversation with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. For more information on this podcast and others, visit joshtice.com.
Are you getting fired up and fueled up? There are a lot of conferences for pastors that give inspiration and motivation to fire you up about doing ministry. But as I travel around the country and talk with pastors, I find many pastors are motivated to their calling. What they are wanting is practical ideas to fuel that calling. What if there was a conference that could get you fired up and fueled up? I want to invite you to Idea Day, a day designed by pastors for pastors with one purpose, ideas. Pastor Josh Tice and his team at Southern Hills Baptist Church have created an experience that feels more like a conversation than a conference. At Idea Day, you will be invited to learn ideas from other pastors while contributing ideas that have worked well for your church. You will get and give practical ideas about leadership, financing for your church, taking the next step in church growth, even ideas for facilitating small groups that are effective. Don't miss this incredible day that will fire you up and fuel your ministry tank.
Hey, welcome back to the Idea Talks. We are so glad that you've joined us for this session. My name is Josh Tice. I'm the pastor of Southern Hills Baptist Church here in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm joined by my friend,
Drew Polinencio.
Drew. And Drew, what do you do for our audience? I think some are familiar with me, but what do you do here in Vegas?
Thanks, Josh, and thanks for giving me this opportunity. You know, in Vegas, I've been working for a top Fortune 500 technology company for nearly a decade now. My specific role at the company is to manage people in a leadership capacity and provide personalized coaching for each team member. You know, this path has let me get experience leading people in a sales environment, to helping people that teach the community, as well as leading people who work in technical support areas. And, you know, the teams that I've been able to lead over the years have been very diverse in their nature. You know, sometimes I've had kids that have been on my team that are 18 years old, or I've had grownups that have been 65 and be able to provide marriage counseling to them. We've had people that are of all ranges of religious backgrounds, to from Christians, Mormons, Muslims, Buddhists, Satanists, atheists, you'd name it. And honestly, it's been a lot of fun, and I've learned a lot over the years about what not to do and great lessons about how to motivate and inspire people on a daily basis. And yeah, that's about all I'm allowed to say right now.
Yeah, you can't be very specific about what company or corporation you work for, but managing people in the technology field, which lends itself not only to technology, but leadership and other things. That's why I'd love to have you join me on this podcast. And Drew, not only that, but you also have a spiritual element to your leadership. Talk about that.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I originally went to Bible college straight out of high school, and my goal was to become a youth pastor. I went to school in Knoxville, Tennessee, and that's where I met my wife, Christina. I would then go on to graduate with a double major in youth and pastoral ministries. You know, my path after graduation eventually led me to intern for a church out in Phoenix, Arizona, all the while still working for the same company. You know, eventually the church turned out to be not a great fit for me or for them, and my job still continued to open doors left and right every single day. That would lead me eventually to move to Las Vegas, Nevada, and start coming to Southern Hills Baptist Church. And currently I serve, you know, in the promotional and media departments of the church, as well as now I'm a deacon.
A deacon, and he's a great deacon at that. So we are glad to have Drew part of the podcast today, and I'm glad to be here as well. And we are going to be jumping right back into the podcast and be releasing a new podcast, for those of you who've been waiting, once a month. Now, when I talk about those who have been waiting, I know specifically my mom has been waiting for another. We have an audience.
There's been a little bit of a lull.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom's been on my back. Yeah. Why haven't you released a podcast? So for mom out there, my sisters, here we go. It's going to be once a month. When specifically?
So we're going to do the cadence of, we're going to release a podcast the last Monday of every month. So the idea is that we have release on a Monday, so as you go into your work week or whatever you're doing, you're fresh and ready and get some great inspiration right off the bat.
Yeah, we're excited about that. So we're going to begin with just a kind of a few ideas. I'm excited about next month's podcast already, which we're going to be recording today,
right,
and then really releasing next month. And next month's podcast has to do with the power of vulnerability.
It's a great topic.
It really is, because when it comes to being a leader today, what does it mean to be a leader and what does it mean to be vulnerable in our leadership? We're going to be talking about vulnerability in speaking, your public speaking. We're going to be talking about vulnerability in your leadership style.
Right.
And we're going to talk about vulnerability in relationships, how to just be individually vulnerable with those around you. It's not something that that maybe we've seen all the time in the past, but it's something definitely we want to see going forward. What are your thoughts on that, Drew?
Yeah, I think it's a great topic to address. I think that leadership over the past couple decades have definitely changed.
Yeah.
And the crowd that they're leading has changed. So thus, our leadership styles should evolve over time.
Yeah, I'm excited about talking about that. What does vulnerability look like? And how do we see that play out in Scripture? But also, how do we see that play out in the corporate world and in the church world? But today's topic is kind of practical, and it's entitled The Road to 100, How to Take Your Church from 20 to 100. I'm interested in this subject, and the reason is because most of the books, podcasts, books I've read, podcasts I've heard, conferences that I've been to that speak of church growth, it's often in the context of somebody with 500 people telling you how to get from 500 to 1,000, or somebody with 5,000 people telling you how to get from 1,000 to 5,000, or somebody with 50,000 people, right, trying to tell you. But really, much of church growth that needs to occur really is up to 100 people. And most of the churches in which we are interacting are churches that have maybe 20, 30 people as a church plant, or maybe 50 to 80 people. How do you break that growth barrier? How do you get up to 100? And that really is the focus of this podcast.
Right. And we're going to answer all those questions and more in just a little bit. But before we get to that, we have a really interesting activity. We want to start every single podcast with a fun activity.
Yeah, a little bit of fun.
So we thought today that we would list the top five.
Top five. Napoleon Dynamite quotes. Now, if you haven't seen Napoleon Dynamite, you need to immediately leave your house.
Stop everything you're doing and drop it and watch it. It's fine.
You have to. Download it right now. You can download it on some device, I'm sure. And watch this, because this is a movie that came out, 15, 20 years ago?
It was a while, yes.
And
it's the only movie I've seen only once. It can literally almost quote every line of it. I had that good of a retention from the movie.
Oh, the movie's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's the stupidest movie you'll ever see.
That's an underestimate.
Okay, yes. So here's what's happening. There are guys, maybe gals as well, driving their car right now. And as we're talking about this, they are thinking of quotes.
Absolutely.
It's coming to mind.
Yep.
And you've missed a cultural touchstone if you have not seen this movie.
Right.
So let's go ahead. Number five. We're going to go from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The fifth best quote in Napoleon Dynamite. You go ahead and give it.
All right. So if you can set the scene, Napoleon is at high school. He's outside in the hallway. He asks a person at the front desk to call Kip at home because his lips are chapped. He says, "Kip, I need some chapstick. My lips are really chapped.
Kip, I need you to get my chapstick.
My lips are really chapped. Oh,
stupid.
It's one of my favorite ones.
I love this because there's somebody listening. They're like, what are they talking about? Rent the movie.
It's a great movie.
Okay, here's number four. Number four. Napoleon goes outside to feed their pet llama.
Yes.
And when he goes out, he's got some enchiladas or something. And he says, "Tina, you fat lard, come get some dinner."
Oh.
It's like every quote has to end with,
yes.
Ugh.
Yeah. And he always has this look of disgust on his face with the wire-rimmed glasses. It's so great. I love it.
All right, number three.
So number three is when Napoleon is asking Pedro. Pedro is interested in a girl, and he's asking Pedro what he's going to do. And Pedro's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And Napoleon's like, what are you going to do for her? And he's like, I think I'm going to build her a cake.
Build her a cake, because that's how Heather and I met.
You built her a cake?
I built her a cake.
That's so great.
I was walking through school, the college I went to, and I thought, there's a beautiful woman. I'm going to build her a cake. This is the way. If you're single, this is the way you win the heart of a woman. So Napoleon, for number two, Napoleon walks into his house, and he sees Kip, his brother, who is graduated. He's older, and he's been at the computer all day long, and Napoleon makes fun of him. What are you doing sitting at the computer all day? And Kip responds, "Napoleon, don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day. Besides,
so good.
Besides, we both know that I'm training to be a cage fighter."
Love that.
Yeah, that's great. And the number one quote, Drew, you have the honor here. The number one quote of Napoleon Dynamite is.
Napoleon and Pedro are discussing how Napoleon has some skills, and this is what he says. They're trying to pick up girls, of course, and Napoleon says, I don't have any skills. And Pedro says, what do you mean? Napoleon says,
You know, your Pedro sounds like he's from India.
I got to work on my Pedro. My Kip and Napoleon, I think, are pretty good. Napoleon responds, says, you know, like nunchuck skills and bow hunting skills and computer hacking skills. Girls only like guys that have great skills. Oh,
great skills. You know, honestly, I think the podcast that people need to be listening to right now is a podcast with Napoleon Dynamite and Pedro. I would subscribe to that.
Yeah.
That. All right, so let's get to some actual content here.
All right.
That's why people are here. And for those who are fast-forwarding through that part, here's where you can stop.
Yeah,
and
get stop to right here. It's fine.
Stop to get the content. The Road to 100, how to make your church from 20 to 100. And let's just begin right there. We talk about the fact that the average church in America is under 100 people in attendance. And the reason we would say that is because most of the research points to that. According to Barna Research, for example, 50% of American Christians attend a church with less than 100 people. Really, when it comes to those who attend a church that's kind of a mega church, how much would you say that is, according to Barna?
So same research. So we often get a lot of attention, and we put a lot of attention on mega churches and that growth. Can they make a lot of noise, or they have a lot of presence in social media, especially these days? But statistically speaking, only 9% of people go to churches that are over 5,000.
Yeah, so if that's the small percentage, really, then why do we focus so much attention on how to grow a church
right. Whenever
it's in that megachurch range? So really, what is it like then to help a church grow from 20 to 100 people? Well, the great thing about it is we've actually been in those scenarios. You've been in churches that are under 100 people. I've been in, I was pastoring when we planted the church, a church that had less than 100 people. Obviously, when you plant a church, not a lot of people. So how do you do that? And we've come up with five main ways in which we think that are helpful. They all begin with P, okay, because I'm a preacher and I have to alliterate. Is that all right?
People can remember that.
Okay.
A little easier.
So it'll be fine. Yeah. Fine, okay. So we would say people, process, preaching, passion, purpose. So let's begin with the idea of people. I would begin by saying building a church from 20 to 100, it's all about relationships with people. Creating new relationships and leveraging current relationships to get them into the door.
So when you talk about the idea of leveraging current relationships, Josh, what did you do when you first started Southern Hills?
Okay, so when we first started Southern Hills, we were able to start with a bit of a team that started from Liberty Baptist Church. My dad, who is also a church planter, talks about the difference in church planting. He talks about pioneers and farmers. A pioneer is the person that comes right to a piece of ground that has no prep work. I mean, he is the first person to ever plow that field. And it's a lot of work. My dad is a pioneer church planter. He came to Vegas with nobody and nothing, and he and mom hit it. A farmer is somebody who's coming to a piece of land that has already had some previous work. And a lot of times, they're able to go a lot further, faster, because of the work of others that people have put in. So for example, I would be a farmer in my dad's terminology. I would be coming in to Las Vegas on the work of what he and mother did. So whenever we started with 20 adults from Liberty when we started, and we started with finances and funds that they never had. So when we talk about really helping a church grow from 20 to 100 people, we're really beginning by saying, okay, what current relationships do you have that can help you begin that church? And so whether that be from a former church, or whether that be from a church that's helping you plant, or whether that be you arriving in a city and you have current relationships because of somebody you know through social media from the past, or maybe you grew up there, whatever current relationships you have,
right. Whatever
you could do to talk those people into showing up on Sunday morning, you want to leverage those relationships.
And you mentioned something very interesting. So you said that Southern Hills was started by the financing as well as some members from your dad's church.
Yeah.
Is that the ideal situation for church plants as opposed to 0 to 100, but you start with a core group?
Yeah, that's why we call it 20 to 100, because we think one of the best ways to start a church is really an ideal way would be to go as a team. Now, again, it doesn't mean it's the only way. In fact, I respect greatly those who are pioneers who can just scratch out the dirt and start from scratch. But right. but that's not always the most productive way. Now, in the book of Acts, we see Paul doing both, right? We see Paul arriving in Athens by himself. We see Paul arriving in Corinth by himself. But then what does Paul do? He calls for Silas to join him from Philippi. He calls for Timothy to join him from, I think it was Thessalonica. And from that moment, the church at Corinth really began to explode because he had a team there. So we think the team mentality is best, if at all possible.
Right.
But sometimes that's simply not possible.
Okay. And I know you talk about relationships here being the key, but what about for those people who don't consider themselves an extrovert? How do you address that crowd?
That's a great point. So when we talk about relationships, first of all, we're talking about the current relationships you have. And then we're talking about creating, intentionally creating new relationships, which means you're going to go into the community as a church planter, as a pastor of a church that you're trying to bring revival to or renewal to, and you've gone in and there's 20 or 30 members, but now it's really time to reach out. How do you intentionally get into the community and build relationships? We state it this way. You really need to focus a great deal of your ministry and a great deal of your time on this mentality. I need to create 100 best friends.
100 best friends.
100 best friends. I think this is a great concept. I think the idea is where I am in this community, I'm going to find, if I can become friends with my postman, I'm going to become friends with the kids or the adults in my daughter's gym class.
Right.
I'm going to become friends with the other parents in my son's baseball league. I'm going to do whatever I can to become friends with the barber that cuts my hair so that if I can have that friendship, I then eventually can build that relationship and then leverage that relationship to get them to come to church on Sunday. But your question is related to personality types.
I love that thought and the fact that you're making 100 best friends because that bridges the gap between personality types. Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, it doesn't matter because at that point, even an introvert can create deep, meaning relationships.
Yeah, we talk about people as Legos, right? Legos, each Lego individually only has so many connectors. There are some larger Legos with many connectors. There are some smaller Legos with few connectors. This is the way people are. I know, for example, my sister, Charity. She has hundreds of connectors. She can be friends with lots and lots of people.
Right, because you know her, you know 20 other people.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's the way she is. But then there's some people that are smaller Legos. They only have so many connectors. But what I've noticed about introverts is that their connectors go much deeper
right.
than extroverts. They have deep relationships. And so regardless of if you're an introvert or an extrovert, when you arrive on the mission field, wherever you're called as a pastor, you're building a church, really, the goal is to build relationships on a deep level for those who are able to, on a more of a surface level for those who are able to. But the idea is build as many relationships as possible. But again, not just so the end game is a friendship, but so that you can leverage that relationship and that friendship in order to bring them to your church so they can hear the gospel and understand who Jesus is. So really, that's a main concept.
That's a great point. So is there anything else before we leave this point, Josh, that you would try to encourage people with or just kind of solidify in their minds this concept of getting from 20 people to 100?
Yeah, yes, I would. I would say this. The method that we're talking about here, this relational, heavy relational method, this method will only get you so far. It reminds me of that old statement, what got you here will not get you there. What I mean by that is, if you're going to use a relational method to build the church from 20 to 100 people, by the time you get to 100 people, you break that growth barrier, you're going to find that you're going to have to break that mold and recreate your growth strategy. And here's why. Because the relational method does not work into 150, 250, 350 people. You can't be best friends, no matter how big your Lego is.
Right.
You can't be best friends with 350 people. And so what we've seen through our stages of growth is that by the time you get to each growth barrier, a lot of times what got you to that place will not be what takes you forward. And you have to take the mold, and this is so hard to do, the mold and the ministry methods that you used, break it entirely, and then recreate. And one of the tragedies of that is that you're not going to be able to take every person to the next level. I remember specifically when we built the church early on, up to 100, 150 people, and the church began to shift in how the church would grow, it was difficult because I was unable to continue necessarily those some of the deeper relationships. And my role began to shift as a pastor. And some people could understand that and go forward with us as the church grew, and some could not, and that's difficult. And so the Lord transitioned them maybe to other ministries that they could have that deeper personal relationship with the senior pastor.
So I love that point about that what got you here will not get you there. And you have to be really comfortable and flexible to break the mold each time.
Yeah, each step along the way, you're going to have to stop and break the mold. So that leads us to our second one. It's all about relationships with people. But number two, I would say, it's all about working a process.
Working a process. That's interesting.
Yeah, we're talking here about assimilation. I don't think our churches do a bad job at getting people to church.
Right.
I think we do a bad job at keeping people at the church. We have a lot of visitors, right? I mean, we're out there bringing people in, and they show up, and they just never come back.
And that's such a great point, because we do so much work in the churches specifically at getting them to that first point. We knock on doors, we hand out flyers, we hand out social media posts, we all to try to get them to that first service, and then
never see them again.
Right.
And this is something I talk with so many of my friends, and it really becomes all about, okay, how do I assimilate them into the church? When we speak of assimilation, understand what I mean. We're talking about taking a first-time guest and transforming them into a fully engaged member.
And what do you mean by fully engaged member?
A fully engaged member is somebody who, whatever it is for your church specifically, for our church, a fully engaged member is somebody who has visited the church once, then we call them a second time guest, then we call them a regular attender, and then we talk about membership. And we take them through a membership class specifically. They sign a membership covenant, and then they continue down our discipleship process, which is probably a great topic for another podcast. Yeah.
So that's some of your process now. Was that the same process that you had very early on when you first started the church?
No. See, our process when we grew from 20 to 100, this early process was very simple, but it was a process that we followed. And the reason it had to be simple is because I and my wife, Heather, were the only ones who were doing it.
Right.
So the process that started early on was simple. Guest connection card, get every guest to fill out a connection card, email address, phone number, everything that you possibly can get. Back when we started, it was a home phone number and sure, a physical address, and some people had email addresses. Now it would be, you know, can I connect with you on Facebook? Can I friend you? All of this. So guest connection card. Then from a guest connection card, we would always have a gift at the door as they left.
I love that.
It's so organic. It's not so much now where our church is at the size of our church, but when there's 80 people sitting around, 30 people sitting around, it's really organic to be able to say, hey, before you go, I have a gift for you. And then to bring them that gift. Whatever that gift is, it doesn't matter what that gift is. But whatever the gift is, give them that gift at the door. Then where we went from there is we would always send out a thank you text. Hey, thank you so much for coming.
Right.
We really are glad that you came. If you have any questions about the church, by the way, this is Pastor Josh. If you need anything, please let me know. That was the third step. We had seven. The fourth step that we would have right after the text is we would send out a thank you card. That week. So we send it out on Monday. It would arrive Thursday or Friday. Thank you for visiting the church. If you ever need anything, give us a call. The week following, we would then show up with a little gift at their door. This worked really well in 2004, 2005, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much I would do that even about 13 years later, but this is what we did. We'd bring them over a gift, thank them for coming. The next thing we would do is I would call them about 2 weeks later. And the last thing we would do is I'd send them a formal letter. So those were the seven touches that we had in our assimilation process.
I love that. And I think the fact that what you're saying here is you have very specific things, but the specific things are not the things that matter most. It's the fact that you had a process to begin with.
That was brilliantly said. Yes, exactly. It's not the things, it's that you have things and that your process is actually functioning. So I think really grown from 20 to 100, you think, man, it's too early. It's just organic. It's just us. I don't need a process. No, you need a process. And your process will change from growth spurt to growth spurt, but it's all about relationships with people. It's all about working a process.
That's great. So we have first, from growing your church to 20 people to 100, it's first is about relationships with people, and then it's all about your working with a process. What's the next point?
Yeah, the next one is it's all about preaching. all about preaching. Tom Rainer talks about this in his book, Surprising Insights from the Unchurched. One of the things that he talks about so much is that a guest is primarily attracted to a church based upon the relationship they perceive with the guy up there speaking from the moment they get in the door.
Right.
All sorts of things matter. Is it a friendly church? Do they have programs? Do they have things? Are they nice there? Is their parking lot clean? But the thing that matters most, according to the research, is do they connect with the guy who's preaching?
I love that, and I love the fact that I remember a quote that kind of is accurate right now. It says, what you win them with is what you win them to. So long term, if you think 20 years down the road, what do you want people to stick to your church for? Is it program? Is it whatever? Is it preaching? That's such a great point.
I completely agree, and this is one of the things that go back to our early days. I didn't have a lot. When we started the church, we had, for those church planters out there, you know what it's like. You're not only greeting people at the door, you're also helping them park their car, you're greeting them, you're the usher who gives them the bulletin.
You clean the bathrooms.
You sit them down, you lead the music, you pass the tray, and then you preach, and then you greet them as they leave. I mean, you and your wife are everything. But preaching, man, that never changes. You know, I remember when we first started, Drew, we started our church about 6 miles away, and Las Vegas doesn't have a plethora of churches.
Sure.
But we started our church about 6 miles away from an incredibly exciting, powerful, church, Baptist church that had already started. And it had started probably about 10 years prior to us, and they had just moved into a new building. Wow. Not a huge building, but a nice building. And they had hundreds and hundreds of people going to it. They had many programs, lots of pastoral staff. I mean, it was awesome. I would drive by that church, for example, and I would think to myself, I wish I could go to that church, you know? But then I have to go to mine. And I'd show up at our church, and I'd think, what do we have to offer? I mean, literally, in our community, why would anybody go to my church instead of going to that church when, honestly, I would rather go to that church myself, look at all the program. And then I remember thinking, they may have better program. They may have more people. They may have a lot going for them. But when it comes to the 35 to 40-minute preaching time, I've got exactly what they have. I've got a pulpit.
Right.
I've got a Bible. And I can let it rip. I at that point, it's the great equalizer. The pulpit and the preaching ministry is the great equalizer. And so, man, from 20 to 100 people, if you can preach and communicate the Word of God effectively, you will draw people to stay at your church, and they'll be there for the right reasons, and that is preaching.
That's such a good point. I think about in life, whenever we're trying to make progress, there's two options. You can either make progress or you can make excuses. Everybody doesn't realize the fact that every single person, from the person who is a poor person on the road to the multi-billionaire that's running a company, everybody has the exact same 168 hours a week. Everybody. It's the one thing that, to your point, is the great equalizer in life. So at this stage in church growth, for you, that great equalizer was the fact that you had the same amount of time to preach.
Yeah, I love that. When you speak of time, it reminds me of something we like to talk about, too, to church planters. When we speak to church planters, we always talk about dividing their time in half. Think of your time as 168 hours a week. When it comes to work, however much time you're going to use, 60, 70, 80 hours, you can divide it literally in half. 50% of your time, invest that into getting the people to church, and 50% of the time, invest that in giving them something when they get to church.
I love that.
Somebody who spends, somebody in this stage, 20 to 100, who spends all of their time trying to get people to church will not have spent enough time in the Word of God or in their library to have anything worthwhile to give them. So you get a big crowd and you've got nothing to give them. But then sometimes the temptation for church planter is, or somebody between 20 to 100 people, is to spend all of their time in the library and they've got a great sermon for their wife and nobody else is going to be there.
Right.
And so you really have to balance that, and you have to be honest with yourself, thinking, okay, I'm building relationships, I'm trying to work this process, do I have time to write a good sermon? Or have I spent all my time writing a good sermon, and have I had time to bring people in? And personality plays into that as well.
So thus far, we've talked in our podcast about getting your church to go from 20 to 100. It's all about relationships with people, it's all about working a process, and it's all about preaching. Before we go any further, we want to thank our first sponsor of the podcast today. Our first sponsor of the podcast is
ProChurch.
ProChurch. So ProChurch specializes in not only church media and graphics and web, but they can help you out in many different aspects of your ministry.
Yeah, Pro Church is run by Daniel Ermler out in Fresno, California, one of the great ministries. And I think they've been a huge help to our church over the years and so many other churches, church planters, especially in that area of 20 to 100. And when you're talking about a church that needs to grow from 20 to 100, I know that Pro Church is right now offering an incredible offer to churches. It really is an incredible offer. Drew, tell us a little bit about that offer.
Yeah, so right now they're running a special if you sign up. It's called the Big Church Bundle. And every single week they'll be releasing completely free to you resources that will help your church ministry grow and continue to refine your different aspects in a great way. If you visit prochurch.com, you can find out more about this Big Church Bundle.
All right, let's jump into point number four. Point number four is of growing a church from 20 to 100, it's all about expressing passion. For somebody to come back, they need to know that you are as excited about this church and this next step as anybody's ever been excited about anything. So you're going into a church, there's 40 people left, its heyday was back in 1974, they had 400 people at one point, but now they're down to 30, and you're thinking to yourself, man, I could be passionate if the church had 300 people. How can I show passion when the church has 30 people? What you must do is become passionate about what could be and not necessarily what is.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, because if you know people that are passionate in life, sometimes passion will forgive a lot of other things. They can be super passionate about whatever the cause is, but they might not have all the details worked out. But because they have an all-consuming passion about what they're doing, you just look past those faults.
It's so hard not to get discouraged when things are not great, especially when you go online and you see your friends and, man, this is going great, and you see everybody's highlight reel about how awesome their church is or how amazing their business is, and you think to yourself, man, I'm a loser. So we always are thinking negative thoughts. The problem is expressing those negative thoughts. You should have deep relationships. We're going to talk about this in our next podcast, having vulnerable relationships where you can express those negative thoughts and get counsel and feedback. But when it comes to what you express publicly, when it comes to what you express from the pulpit, it should always be that of passion and faith and belief in what God is going to do in the future. And in doing so, you're expressing passion to people who want to believe, but they want to believe almost by proxy because they see that you believe so much, and they almost believe that you believe. And that really, really is helpful. And it's really hard, Drew. It really is hard to express what so many of these guys are understanding inherently because they're there, what it's like to walk into a church after years of work or months of work or sometimes years of work on Sunday morning, and then you see the same four dozen people. And you think to yourself, I can't do this. I've got no passion. I can't put it on. And that's where your passion can't be fake. It has to be in Christ and in His gospel and really in the potential of what He could do there. This is what I love when Jesus is with His disciples. He never saw His disciples for who they were. He always saw them for who they were going to become.
That's a great point.
He never looked at Peter like we do when we read the Gospels and think, what an idiot, because he was. He did terribly stupid things. Jesus never looked at Peter for who he was. He looked at Peter for what he knew he is becoming. And if we could look at our churches as not at what they are and the mess that they are, but what they are becoming through the power of Christ, that's when we begin to get really passionate. But even with that, sometimes our passion begins to wane. And we think, I don't know that I can put on in this way. So that leads us kind of to our last thought.
Sure. So when we cannot have or we are lacking passion, the one thing that can push us through times that we are lacking that is our core purpose. And some people would express this as their why. Why do they get up out of bed in the morning? Why do they do what they do?
Yes, it's all about knowing your purpose as a pastor, church planter, preacher, whatever it might be, from 20 to 100. And if you know your purpose, you know the why. Speak to that. Speak to that in the book we were talking about.
Yeah, so there's a great book out there that's the author is Simon Sinek, and the title of the book is called Starting with Why. And he talks in the book about how when you start with the why about what you're doing, the how and the what will fall into place. Often we want to start in life and ministry with what we should do or how we should do it. So we go about trying to come up with great schemes or try to come up with great plans or master plans or vision statements, and we in the middle of that process, lose the fact of why we ever even started this process to begin with.
Yes.
So when we're lacking the passion in our life, we have to be able to recognize our core purpose in that.
And getting back to the purpose of, look, God was the one who called me. God is the one who has inspired his word. God is the one who has empowered me. And knowing that purpose, man, I cannot tell you how many times Sunday nights after church or Monday mornings, which are not always easy, to look back and say, okay, am I going to continue? And the answer is yes. Why? Because my purpose by God is to have been sent here and to do his work. And there's nothing that builds passion like remembering your purpose. So that those would be our five. Our five on what we call the road to 100, how to take your church from 20 to 100. Now, you might be sitting there saying, okay, that was interesting, but honestly, I've got passion and I've got purpose, but I just need some practical ideas. So, Drew, do we have a resource that might speak to practical ideas for ministry?
I think we do, Josh. So the resource that we want to point out to people today is ideaday.net. So ideaday.net is a place that you can connect with these Idea Day seminars that we have across the globe.
Yeah, in fact, we have an Idea Day coming up here in the South on September 19th. An incredible church hosted by Pastor John Anderson is allowing those in the South, and if you're not from the South but can make it to Atlanta, we'd love to see you there for this next Idea Day. I love Idea Day because they are not only conversation, roundtable conversations where you can really pick up some practical ideas for life and ministry, but also there's some coaching experiences where you can really get under the teaching of somebody who's really advanced in a specific area that your church needs to advance. And I know you read the Bible. I know you pray. I know you're passionate about your walk with God. Maybe you just need a few practical ideas. Well, that's where Idea Day comes in. Idea Days. It's really just a day to share ideas. No agendas, just ideas.
Yeah, these are not sessions that you come to hear a speaker. They're a session where you can come and you can collaborate on ideas.
Yeah.
Themed around a specific topic. You can share your ideas and get ideas from other people.
Yeah, this is one of the things that make it unique and make it a lot of fun. So if you haven't signed up for an Idea Day, Idea Day South, Idea Day South is September 19th. You can go to ideaday.net and register today. And then we have Idea Day West that's coming up here in January of 2018, right here in Las Vegas, the original. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. And we're going to be giving some announcements about that one, some slight changes that are coming up. Very exciting news. And we'll be giving that over the months here on the podcast as well.
Cool. Is there any parting thoughts you have before we leave today's podcast?
Well, I would just say this. I know what it's like to be in the trenches at 20 to 100 people. And a lot of times the enemy's going to be in your ear, and he's going to be saying, you can't do it, it's done, it's time to give up. Listen, you need a brother telling you this. It's true. God called you. You've got this. All you have to do is maybe make a few tweaks, stay faithful, advance the kingdom, and before you know it, you'll broach that 100 and break that 100 mark, and you're going to begin seeing God work in your church and ministry like never before. I believe that because I've seen it.
So join us next time on the Idea Talks podcast, and we're excited for our next topic.
Yeah, the next topic being the power of vulnerability. Look forward to seeing you then.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.